Dealing with the difficult is nothing new. As we heard in our reading this morning, much of the world's major religions, many of them have been devoted to how to address these difficulties, the pain and suffering that exists in the world. Dealing with what's difficult is not new. Welcoming what's difficult, now that's something different. What is this strange concept of which we speak, welcoming the difficult? Dealing with difficulty does not make sense. Figuring out how to overcome difficulty, many a hero and heroine's tale takes us with them on the journey of doing just that. Avoiding difficult conversations, most of us have done that at one time or another, but welcoming the difficult, that seems like maybe a little bit too much to have to swallow. I mean, it makes sense. Hold it with disdain, get mad or angry about it, struggle with it, fight it, resent the difficult. These are more normal responses, but welcoming difficulty just feels funny, weird, wrong somehow, at least to me, and I'm the one that picked this topic. Before we dive into the spiritual art of welcoming what's difficult, let's take a moment, though, to get clear on what we're not talking about. We're not talking about things that are actually bad, like illness, injustice, or natural disasters. I'm not going to suggest that we should try and find silver linings in Hurricane Harvey or Irma, though it's possible that there might be some of those for some of those folks down the road. We also won't be revisiting the common trope that the Chinese character for crisis is made up of the characters representing danger and opportunity, which is actually incorrect and a false translation, for the record, despite both President John F. Kennedy and Lisa Simpson stating otherwise. We are going to talk about setting an intention, though, an attitude towards life of welcoming the difficult. And we're going to have Sufi mystic poet Rumi kick things off. In his poem, The Guest House, he suggests the following. This being human is a guest house. Every morning is a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honorably. She may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. I read that, and I was like, wow, that's even a step further than I had planned on going. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in? That's not my instinctive response to shame, to my own dark thoughts, and to my own negativity. I don't know about you, but my instinct is to more push it away, even slam the door shut maybe, and say, no, thank you, you're not welcome here, I'm not interested. But I generally like Rumi and have been inspired by his wisdom and many other poems and passages, so what's this all about? Author and religious contemplative Phil Fox Rose offers some insight. He writes, "What's your first impulse when you have a bad feeling? If you're like me, it's usually to suppress it, but we all know that doesn't work. What you focus on sticks around. This is one of the big lessons you learn through meditation. If you try to suppress a thought, it becomes your entire focus, worse than before." He proceeds to suggest that the path forward, as we have all heard, lies in going through the problem instead of avoiding it. Suppression, repression, avoiding, rejecting, ignoring, squashing, numbing, these are all common responses to difficult or painful feelings. What if the only true way out, though, is through? And assuming that's correct, how does one get through difficult emotions? Putting up with them until they go away can seem like going through them, but it's possible that Rumi is right, that we actually need to welcome them, not only so that we can get through them, but also so that we can see the gifts they have to offer us. As I said earlier, though, this is not a sermon about silver linings down the road or about the deep learnings that our struggles can often offer us once we're through them. It's about being in the moment. It's about welcoming what's difficult right now. Because even things that we should not welcome, like cancer or hurricanes or racism, those things do provoke feelings within us at different moments in time. And one of the best ways through those difficult feelings is actually to welcome them. What does that mean, though? What does it mean when Rumi suggests we should welcome them at the door and entertain them? How do we actually get through? Rose suggests that the appropriately named welcoming prayer is one way. The welcome prayer, originally created by Miriam Mrazowski of Brooklyn, New York, has three simple steps. First is to focus and sink in. Second is to welcome. And third is to let go. And really, if prayer isn't a term that works for you, call it whatever you want. A welcoming process or a welcoming practice, whatever works for you. Because the steps themselves, they work. The first one, focus and sink in. Stop running, stop avoiding, stop fighting. Turn around inside yourself. Look the difficult feeling, whether it's fear or anxiety or panic, look it in the eye and physically feel it. Notice what it's doing to your body, whether your arms are crossed or you have a nervous tic or clenched fists. And don't get lost in the feeling, don't let it overwhelm you, but be there with it, even relate to it. A common problem in this step is being over-identified with a feeling. It's as if the feeling is all of you and your experience in the moment and there's nothing else. We can lose the sense of self. So if you're in that place, even saying out loud, perhaps, I relate to this fear, helps it make it something outside of you. And it can help the fear become not you, but a feeling that you are having. Focusing and sinking in means feeling the difficult without getting lost in it or overwhelmed by it. Second is welcome. Now this is the hard part for me, and maybe the hardest. As in, seriously, you want me to welcome feelings of shame? Or you want me to welcome this feeling of fear, really? You want me to be embraced and be happy about being paralyzed with fear? But yes, welcome. Rose suggests actually saying, welcome fear, welcome shame, or welcome anger. Because whatever the feeling you're having is, because the second step is really about accepting the reality of what you're feeling and accepting the reality of whatever situation triggered the feelings you're having. It's not accepting the bad parts of the reality. It's not saying that harmful words or actions by others are okay. We still need to hold them accountable. It is saying, though, that this is part of my reality, my human experience right now. Welcome. I choose not to fight you. I choose to accept you. Number three is letting go. Mrazowski's original version of her prayer went like this. I let go of my desire for security and survival. I let go of my desire for esteem and affection. I let go of my desire for power and control. I let go of my desire to change the situation. As Rose suggests, a shorter version, more flexible to a given moment, might be simply, I let go of the desire to change this feeling. Or even simpler, I let go of my fear, I let go of my anger, I let go of my shame. There are often gifts to be received once we've welcomed and let go of our difficult feelings, and those can be powerful and transformative. But there is something to be said for the process of welcoming, the intention, the orientation, and attitude towards life. Vulnerability is another feeling in our experience that can be difficult. Professor of social work and shame researcher Brené Brown writes all about the difficulties of being vulnerable in her book, Daring Greatly. She says, quote, regardless of our willingness to do vulnerability, it does us. When we pretend that we can avoid vulnerability, we engage in behaviors that are often inconsistent with who we want to be. Experiencing vulnerability isn't a choice. The only choice we have is how we're going to respond when we are confronted with uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. She suggests that being vulnerable is so hard and so risky that many of us develop vulnerability armor, practices that help us keep feeling safe in the face of vulnerability. If you haven't read it, I highly encourage the book because she goes into far more detail than I could go into, even if I was going to do a whole sermon just on this. But to name just a few kinds of vulnerability armor we wear. There is numbing, where we numb ourselves to the feelings. There is perfectionism, where we try to avoid the bad feelings by doing everything perfectly so that nobody criticizes us, which, you know, is a very effective strategy. And then there's cynicism, criticism, cool, and cruelty, which boils down to attacking others to avoid feeling our own feelings of vulnerability. And really, none of these are great strategies, right? So why does this all matter? Because as Brown states, vulnerability is the last thing I want to see in you. I'm sorry. Vulnerability is the last thing I want you to see in me, but the first thing I look for in you. I'll say that again. Vulnerability is the last thing I want you to see in me, but the first thing I look for in you. We desperately want and need vulnerability in our lives, in ourselves, and in those around us. Actually being vulnerable ourselves, though, can be really hard and really scary, thus the need for the armor. But if we can lean into those feelings in safe settings with safe people most of the time, and maybe every once in a while in less than safe settings, taking a risk, if we set the intention of welcoming the difficult feelings, of welcoming vulnerability, we can perhaps find more of it. And really, whether it's shame, anger, or fear, or the risk of being vulnerable ourselves, there's so many more ways to avoid the difficult in life than just avoiding difficult feelings. There's so many more difficulties we come across, and so much can be made from how we choose to approach them. We are a pain and difficulty avoidant culture. We fear pain, we fear difficulty, we fear failure. Some parents might teach their kids otherwise, some places may offer a different path, but often the cultural message we receive is avoid the difficult instead of welcoming it. And so welcoming difficulty is actually a countercultural message. Now imagine with me, if you would, what it would be like to be sick and confined to your bed for a week. And, in this scenario, to not have a cell phone or a tablet or a television or even a radio. No technology to keep you busy. You also don't get books or magazines or newspapers. You're just alone in a room with the occasional visitor and someone to bring you meals. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty terrible to me. I might even go so far as hell on earth, a whole week where I just have to sit there being with myself. And yet, Episcopal priest and acclaimed author Barbara Brown Taylor, who was the author of our reading this morning, she shares in that book, An Altar in the World, of her experience of just this, of being confined to bed for a week without technology to entertain her. Now, I don't know if she made her own choice to leave out the books and the magazines, but here's her experience in her own words. When I was confined to bed for the better part of a week, I spent hours watching the sunlight that came through the slats of my wooden blinds move down the white wall of my bedroom. First thing in the morning, it made honey-colored rectangles with soft edges. By 10 a.m., the wall was striped with bands of light as straight as rulers. By noon, they looked more like the rungs of a ladder, dappled with leaves from the winged elm outside my window. By 2, they had lost most of their character as the sun moved over the roof of the house and left the front yard in deepening shadow. This may sound boring to you, but it was not. It was beautiful. It was reassuring. It gave me a place outside myself to go. Paying attention to it, I lost my will to control it. Watching it, I became patient. Letting it be, I became well. The attitude that Barbara Brown Taylor brings in that story and in so many others in her book, it's a different way of being. It's a different way of approaching life. It's a welcoming, a receptivity to what life brings. And it was just so amazing to me and impressive to see how she did this over and over again. She shared in another section the time of an ice storm that hit her home, and she lives in a farm out far in the country, and so the power was out for a whole week. And their water in the house came from a well with an electric pump, so there was no water to bathe in. They did have a well out in the that they could get to that down in the barn, so they did have water to drink. But they were without power, without electricity, without heat for a whole week. And It was hard, of course, and she shared about how hard it was and what a wonderful thing it was when the electricity came back on, but she took away from it this wonderful approach to the understanding the importance of survival and of doing the basic things of finding warmth with their pets and with her husband, and of just being present to the basic functioning of life in the world. She also shared another story about how she went and volunteered at a homeless shelter as a clergy person. Overnight, this homeless shelter was, and somehow she ended up with a task at the end of the night in the morning at 6 a.m. of cleaning the toilets. And so she was sitting there, and they were kind of a mess, and she was sitting there trying to drum up all of her spiritual energy and strength to get through this task. And then she realized by the time that she was done that she, just like everybody else, poops and pees, and that she was just cleaning up like anyone else would need to. And this approach that she brought reminds me of some of what you see in the Tao Te Ching and Taoism. There's a particularly lovely passage where the Tao Te Ching speaks of a tree in a storm, right? And the rigid trees, the ones with the stiffest trunks, they break in the face of all the wind and the storm. But the flexible trees, the young saplings that can bend all the way over and touch the ground, when the storm is done, they're able to come back upright and be whole. Barbara Brown Taylor writes, cleaning refrigerators and toilets helps you connect the food cycle at both ends. Making beds reminds you that life-giving activities do not require much space. Hanging laundry on the line offers you a chance to fly prayer flags disguised as bath towels and underwear. If all life is holy, then anything that sustains life has holy dimensions too. Now, this is not true of all things, of course. Trying to flow with the devastation of Hurricane Harvey is not a thing. But trying to be present to and welcome and accept, to flow with the feelings that come with your own personal loss and devastation, that could be a thing. It could be what helps you get through the moment or each consecutive moment, day after day, week after week, as you try to rebuild your life. So we have a choice. Let's choose. Let's choose standing and facing the difficult instead of running away. There will be times where we get worn down and need to stop, of course, to take a break and rest. And we will almost certainly need to ask for help along the way. But I hope we can face our feelings, face the difficult conversations, face the difficult experiences, and find a way to bring an attitude of intention and welcome. When appropriate, may we welcome the difficult, and maybe even make friends with it. As we heard in our story for all ages this morning, Enemy Pie, where a father helped his son make a friend out of his enemy. When we bring love into the equation, when we bring goodness, when we try and live our values into being, we can make a difference. It's not always going to work, right? Every story is not going to turn out like Enemy Pie. Sometimes it's not going to work, but it's worth trying. It's worth being countercultural. It's worth trying to make a difference. So friends, as we go about our days, as we go about our lives, let's try and welcome the difficult, embrace it and greet it with love, and try and make a difference in the world. Go on. Amen.